Solving Network Mysteries.
Hello? I think I got a late start. I just want to point out my hat. Does everyone like my hat? I drew that myself. My name's Dan Van Bellekamp. I work at SRA. I'm going to give a quick talk on what I call solving network mysteries. Part of my motivation for this talk is I've been doing the contracting consulting thing for about 10 years now. And being a consultant, I get the opportunity to go out to see different networks, different network environments, and we see a lot of strange stuff on the networks we go and see. I've been collecting different stories, and I've been trying to compile them. What I'm trying to do is just share some of the stories I have with you and try to build a case for including audit and monitoring as part of your security program. So I just want to start with a quick background about just who I am. I work for a company called SRA. We're a government contracting consulting group. I work in the engineering side in their information assurance department. And I do things like penetration testing, training, readiness reviews, incident response, and security assessments. And in my past life, I've done similar things for different companies. Just to start my talk off, I'd start with a little quiz, just to ask some questions. These are pretty basic questions. But when we go out and do our different assessments, you'd be surprised at how many of the security officers and administrators can't answer these simple questions. So how many people here can answer some of these questions? How many people know what's happening on your network? Anyone know what their users are doing? If users are complying with policy, how many people here have security policies or work in an organization with security policies? How many people are complying with those policies? Okay. Many of my friends in the security community, they only wear their security hat when they're getting paid to wear their hat. Otherwise, they fall into the user category, and they may not be always compliant. How many users know if your internal or external communications are affecting your posture? Has anyone picked up this magazine? It's free. The cover talks about the silent threat of outbound email. Decent article. It talks just about what information is sensitive within your organization and what some of the things you can do to help protect yourself from users or employees sending out information that you may not want being sent out with your name attached to it. How many people know if you can detect anomalous behavior on your network? To be able to detect anomalous behavior, you need to know what your normal behavior looks like, and then you can tell what's anomalous. And then network diagrams. Just having a network wire diagram showing your different system setup, you don't always know what information is being sent between those two systems. So with this talk, I'm going to talk again about some examples of some experience that I've had with different engagements where if people had audit and monitoring as part of their program, they could have been avoided. And then with each of the examples, I'm going to talk about some of the techniques and recommendations that came out of the engagements, and then I'll hit on some benefits and various recommendations for including audit and monitoring in your program. The various examples I'm going to talk about, they're all from my personal experience, and they're all pretty timely, with the exception of one. They've all happened within the last year. One's about a year and a half old by now, and I'll probably need to take that one out. I've been giving this talk for a while now. I try to update it with some of the more current stories, although some of them keep happening over and over and over again. So, the first one is with a distributed denial of service agent discovery. This happened back in January of last year, right before the big attacks on eBay and CNN. This happened with a company that was an enterprise network solution company. I point that out just because it was a company that had some pretty technical savvy people. They had a firewall, they had a firewall policy, it happened to allow DNS traffic. They had their main internet point of presence in Colorado, that's where they were managed. And then they had DNS servers in Colorado, but they also had them in the local regional offices. Here's a very high level of the network. I just like to jump down and point to things, but I'm not gonna be able to do that. Anyway, you can see that there was internet point of presence, they had their main POP in Colorado. They had the firewall, primary and secondary DNS servers. And then in all the regional offices, they had the local DNS. What happened in this case, one of the regional offices was going through some equipment upgrades and rewiring. And when they were plugging their equipment back in, they did some testing, and they noticed some unusual traffic. And the local tech was super paranoid. He thought they'd been hacked, so they called us up to come help take a look. And what we found was that the unusual traffic that was appearing on the firewall and other places was in IP address ranges that were reserved. This company had a Class B IP space, and in the third octet, they used numbers from 1 to 100. Everything from 100 and up was reserved. They weren't supposed to be using it. What they found was IP numbers floating around their network in this reserved space. So something wasn't right. So we went out and we looked on the network, and we wanted to get a better feel for where this traffic was coming from. So we put some various network sniffers on the network. And what we noticed was we were able to zero in on these IP addresses that were reserved. And we noticed they were all kind of coming to and from this DNS server. So we were able to then focus our attention down to that server. And we noticed that by going through the logs that it was running a vulnerable version of Bind. There's a reason why DNS and Bind is always in the top 10 SAN's greatest vulnerabilities. And this is one of those reasons. This one vulnerable version allowed the attackers to get root remotely. So these attackers came in through the firewall, could allow DNS to this local server. They rooted the box, they owned it, and then they exploited some other relationships throughout the network. We were also able to look back at some of the firewall logs and notice that there's a lot of traffic coming in on port 53. That traffic was coming not to the primary and secondary servers, but it was going to the local DNS server in the regional office. If the firewall was being reviewed regularly, that would have been picked up a lot sooner. So in this example, what we did, nothing super technical, but what we did was just some traffic analysis on that unusual traffic, zeroed in on that, looked through some of the firewall logs, and then the logs on the DNS server and the operating system. And the lessons learned were pretty straightforward as well. What we found out that the firewall logs weren't being reviewed, found out that the DNS server, operating system, and the application, the logs weren't being reviewed there as well. IP spoofing wasn't being monitored. And what I mean by that is the IP addresses in that reserved space weren't being monitored for. Those IPs shouldn't be on the network. It would have been pretty simple to put up some filters, some other monitors to watch for IPs in that range, and that wasn't happening. And not just for security, but for troubleshooting or other misconfigurations. And then integrity checking wasn't being performed on their servers either. The recommendations flow from those lessons learned. Basically, they need to perform some log review of their network server systems, your DNS, mail, web, firewall. That has to be done. It's not always so glamorous, but you can automate that, and you can also outsource it. There are companies out there like Counterpane that will monitor those logs for you. Companies like Counterpane is one, there's several of them, but Counterpane in particular will put sensors out on your network, feed those logs into those sensors, and then send them out over VPN to their secure operations center, or their SOC. There they have analysts watching those logs 24/7. When they see anomalous behavior or unusual activities, they'll report back to you. The other recommendations were to put up some type of monitoring software for the network traffic. Again, filter out those unusual IPs. They shouldn't be on the network, so you can filter those out. Or also put some protocol analyzers up. If they had been watching just for DNS traffic and saw those huge jumps, that could have tipped them off a lot sooner. And then lastly, use some type of integrity checking. Tripwire is very popular. There's other profile checkers out there. These are tools that will take an image of the system after you've configured it, take that picture in its gold stage, then you periodically go back, take another image, and then you compare it. If there's any differences, then there needs to be some type of explanation, or someone has some explaining to do. The next example is with harassing emails. This is a case where with an employee within an organization was receiving some harassing emails, and they suspected that it was coming from with someone from internally within the organization. The emails were coming from outside, from a anonymous source, hotmail.com. Anyone can go out and get a Hotmail account. These were coming in to someone on the inside, and they were happening frequently, that this company didn't necessarily want to prosecute the person that was doing this, but they wanted to find out who it was, and they wanted it to stop. So what they wanted to do was kind of test their hypothesis that this mail was originating from inside the network. They called us in to help them out, and what we did was we collected some network traffic. I'm using a packet sniffer. We collected traffic for a couple days, and then we had a huge collection of traffic. We then went through this traffic, and we searched for mail going to and from hotmail.com. And then we were focused in on the IP address, where it was coming from, and we were really looking for some CGI postings to see if we had some proof that they were coming from inside the network. The next screens I'm going to show you are from a tool called Net4 by a company called Network Forensics. I use it just for illustrative purposes because it makes it easier for me to show what we're searching for. The Net4 tool is basically a packet sniffer that will collect packet on your network. It then reconstructs the packets into sessions. Those sessions are then loaded into a database, and then there's a GUI front end, a web browser front end to that database so you can query it. I was trying to do something else with just TCP dump and some regular string editors like grep, but the screens got real ugly and the presentation for PowerPoint just wasn't working. So that's why I'm using this nice GUI. So we had this packet capture. We collected traffic for a couple days. We had a couple gigabytes of data. We went through and we entered in our string looking for traffic going to and from hotmail.com. What came back, I've changed the names to protect the guilty. It really should be my mother-in-law. See traffic coming in from dan00van@hotmail.com. Dan00van is our is the person attacking or sending out these harassing emails, or harasser. And then our victim is dan@net4i.com. And what this tool, what the search came back with, is it came back with one email session. And I can, the tool allowed me to drill down to show me more and more detail about these sessions. So if I drill down the first time it came up and it showed me the subject, a little bit more information about that session, subject came up with your mama, then I can drill down again to show me the content of that email. It came out again with just the content of that email that was being sent or being received. And you see it's coming from Dan00van, our harasser, to dan@net4i.com. And there's a bunch of insults to your mama. And I tried to mask out some of the more funny, I mean, the more offensive insults. There used to be a tool out there called Up Yours. I'm familiar with it. But you could send out insults like this with that tool. Anyway, so once we found this email, we knew that we had this harassing email within our packet capture. So our next step was to go back and see if we could find the mail originating from within the company actually being sent out before it was received. So we needed to do a search on some unique string, and the string we used was cgibin/hotmail, which is what you would see in your URL locator window when you're posting emails through Hotmail. A lot of times, what we had here was just raw packets with IP numbers. So we didn't have all the IP numbers resolved into domain names. So this is why we had to use a different string. There are utilities out there that when you capture your packets, it will go through and resolve all those IP numbers into domain names to make your searching easier. But we had several gigabytes worth of data, so it was going to take a long time to go out and do that resolving. So we used this way instead. So by searching on that string, we were able to come back and find the IP address attached with that string, and that IP address belongs to hotmail.com, one of their servers. We then came back and did more searching on that IP, and came back with all the sessions going out to that IP address to hotmail.com, and I masked out the original IP address. And what it's showing is these are all the sessions from some internal IP, the one I've masked out, going out to hotmail.com, posting emails. So we then went through and drilled down on these sessions, and what came out is this is one of the postings going out there. I wish I could point. On the bottom line, kind of halfway through, well, one third of the way over, you see a login with the user ID of Dan00van. So now we're seeing that our harasser ID is being logging in to the Hotmail server from within our organization. If I kept drilling down on these sessions, we'd actually see the contents of those insults being posted up to Hotmail and then being sent down. So from this, we were able to grab the IP of our harasser, and we were able to confront the user, and the situation stopped, and it was actually resolved pretty painlessly. In this situation, the organization didn't want to press charges. It never went to litigation. So we were able to go in and do this type of analysis. If someone did want to press charges or take legal action, we would have followed some different procedures, including getting some permits and having law enforcement involved. The recommendations that came out of this for this organization was to implement an email policy. This was a company, it was a government contractor that supported the intelligence community. So they had some sensitive information on their network. Not classified, but it was sensitive. They realized they needed to have better control of what information was leaving their network. So we recommend they put an email policy in that restricted communications, mostly email, only going through the production email source. That means they couldn't pop out to their ISP or use IMAP or use AOL or use Hotmail. They wanted to send an email, they had to go through the production email server. And when they did that, there was some content filtering that would go through and monitor what type of content was being sent out through email. My next example is kind of a compilation of situations where I go out and we do a lot of what we call security assessments, where we go out and we assess the security profile of the network. And what we always find, you know, we go out and we run some tools like network discovery tools, service discovery tools, and we'll come back with a report, and we'll find a lot of we'll come up with a report of like 400 pages or something, and we'll give them to the administrator saying, here's what we found. We found all these web servers, we found these FTP servers that weren't configured properly. And a lot of times the security officers and the administrators kind of scratch their head and say, well, these aren't our boxes. And well, they are yours because they're on your network, but they didn't even know about it. So this is really, it's not uncommon to have users go out and install a new service on their desktop. I've even seen users install web servers on their desktop that are allowed through the internet and they're hosting up, you know, family pictures or something else. I hear a lot of stories now about, I think we've all heard stories now about the wireless networks, how you can drive up and down in Silicon Valley and get an 802.11 connection just by driving around. A lot of those networks are probably users putting in access points without the administrators knowing about it. We also see a lot of cases where, like for example, an engineering group will have an FTP service that they needed to transfer files around between the engineering group. So they went to IT and IT set up an FTP server form and left some of the admin functions to the engineers. The requirements then changed for that engineering group to transfer files to their customers. The server then moved out to the DMZ. These engineers then wanted to share files with, you know, customers and other contractors. They didn't want to have user accounts, so they just left anonymous access, and they wanted them to post files, so they had write access turned on. Meanwhile, the admins don't know this. We come into our audit and we find that, hey, you have not only anonymous FTP access, but you have write access enabled, and you're also hosting about 20 gigabytes worth of wares. It happens. So really, when we go out and we do our assessments, we're running some pretty basic tools when we start off. We're running some network discovery tools like fping, doing some port scanning like nmap. And we run these tools to kind of get an understanding of the network, learn about it, kind of increase our knowledge about the network before we look for vulnerabilities. These are type of tools that can be automated that administrators and security officers can run on a regular basis. This is what's going to help you learn about your network, you know, what's on your network, what users are doing. You know, running these type of tools will help you get that knowledge. There are commercial solutions out there that will help you do this. And I'm going to show you a couple examples of one called NetFox. Again, I like the GUI. And the concept is really simple. Basically, you go out, do some network discovery, find out what's on your network, keep a record of that, and continue to do this. When you come back, when you find a node on your network that doesn't belong there, it will flag you. I like NetFox. I think it's pretty cool. It makes a database of what should be on your network. Then you can put more information in there, like the MAC address, usernames, phone numbers. Again, taking it a step further, you can set up a policy. You know what type of traffic you want or services you want on your network. In this case, the rule set up, as you can see that in the back, but it's set up to say, well, we allow telnet traffic and web traffic on our network. It goes out and does a poll. Well, it comes back and finds, well, it flags and saying, well, I found those services, but I also found five more, and these five don't belong on my network. Yeah, very simple concept. It enables you to learn more about your network. So really the recommendations in this situation is you need to have a network security policy to help you set your baseline and know what to monitor for. And then you need to educate your users to let them know what they're doing when they install a wireless access point or enable write access on the FTP server. You have to educate your users to let them know that that's not always the best thing to do. And then implement some consistent procedures, or basically automation. Do these things consistently so you can enforce your policy. My last example is with system administrators. Sometimes we find administrators that are trying to manage their network as best they can, and they also do some remote management, and often that remote management is done over unsecure channels that they don't realize that that's bad. And, in this case, it was with a government agency that had outsourced its sysadmin functions. This is not unusual in the government. With this case, we were concerned with a controlled application network with a real strict security perimeter, really tight security around this application. They had a firewall, and it only allowed database traffic and email traffic, just the traffic you needed for that application. And they had someone monitoring the firewall. They were taking things seriously. They had a routine audit where auditors came in, and when they were interviewing the security officers, the security officers felt that there was some of this remote administration going on, but they couldn't prove it. They weren't able to get in there and prove that this was happening. So as part of the audit, they asked us to see what we could find out. And what we found out was, yeah, the administrators were trying to monitor the status of the network remotely. They were setting up a batch job that kicked off every night that did a quick health check of the systems, and they sent those results back home in clear text. This is a quick example. This is just some of the information that was in there, but it comes back with host name and network domain information. It would come back with users on the system. It would come back with IP numbers, network information, and then services running. This information is, to an attacker, is what you're looking for. You know, the first step in an assessment or pen testing or whatever you're doing to your victim is information gathering. You know, you're trying to build a profile of your victim. This is the type of information you're looking for. You're looking for the network domain information that you can go back and try other hosts within that domain. You're looking for users that you can go back and brute force those accounts. You're looking for network information that you can get subnets or try to enumerate other nodes on that network. And then services. You want to know what services are running. You want to go back and consult your vulnerability database. You can see they're running HTTP or INET. You can go back and see if you got anything in your bag of tricks. You know, so given that the strict security around this application, this type of information was just not allowed to be sent out. So the way we discovered it was we went back and looked at some of the firewall logs. Again, someone was monitoring the firewall, but they were really looking just for unsuccessful attempts. So we could go back and look at the firewall logs and determine that, yeah, mail was being sent out, and all the email was internal within the organization, with the exception of three accounts being sent out to the three system administrators. So we could zone in real quick that there was some external traffic happening, but we couldn't see what was actually in those emails. So by doing some network traffic analysis, going back to our friendly sniffers, we were able to capture some traffic and drill down to the content of those emails, and that's how we captured what was involved. The lessons learned for this case were the administrators needed some security awareness training. They thought they were doing a good thing. They were trying to keep their network up 24/7. They didn't realize the risk they were giving now to that environment. There was also no official remote administration procedures in place. Again, this network had to be up 24/7, but there weren't any procedures to help do that, as well as adequate tools to support those requirements. The recommendations were straightforward: to implement an appropriate remote admin solution, and then conduct constant admin training. And it's important to do this constantly because you'll find administrators change hands a lot throughout the course of a contract. Companies often support multiple clients with their sysadmin team. And often there's two or three real superstars will go in and get the thing stood up and then they'll phase out. So it's important to keep the training constant. It's also important to keep it kind of tailored to that environment. So what might be appropriate in one environment may not be appropriate in another. That's all my stories. What I've been trying to do is build a case for audit and monitoring, and why you need to do that as part of your security program. And I broke some goals. If you want to try to implement audit and monitoring in your program, I broke the goals down into protect, detect, and then analyze and recover. And audit monitoring isn't really what you would think of in terms of protection. Typically, that's your firewalls, your VPNs, your IDSs. But what audit and monitoring will give you is that feedback loop. It will give you that loop feedback into those systems to help make sure they're configured appropriately and make them better. But in terms of protection, it will help act as a deterrent. If users know they're being held accountable and monitored for their actions, they're less likely to do something wrong. I had a friend that was a sysadmin that put a firewall up a couple years ago. And when he was going through some of the logs, he noticed there was a lot of traffic going out to adult sites, a whole lot. So they set up a policy saying, we're going to start monitoring for this. This is not allowed. And traffic starts to die down a little bit. So that wasn't good enough. So what he did, which was kind of neat, is he posted a list of the top 10 sites that people were going to. Then he posted the top 10 users on the network. And people kind of drew their own conclusions. And then the adult traffic sites started dropping off. So his bandwidth went up, way up. In terms of detection, this is what audit and monitoring really helps you do. It helps you really, as a goal, you really want to give analysis of all your data. With detection, you want to be able to passively collect information off your network, and you also want to be able to actively scan for services or nodes. And then under analyze and recover, you want to be able to have a forensic level analysis. You want to be able to answer questions to who, what, where, when, how. Why it's not there, we never know why, but all the rest of me want to be able to know. You want to be able to do full damage control. You want to be able to get logs from your network systems, applications. And if you can get them all to a centralized information source, so you don't have to go out and pull individual systems, that's key. Some of the enablers, and I'll touch on these, are your logs. Logs are really where you find your footprints or your fingerprints. Network, packet sniffers or intrusion detection systems help give you a better look at that. And then to help you with your analysis with all this information, databases or scripts, automations are going to help you enable audit monitoring. With logs, again, logs are where you find your footprints. They're your number one source of information often, but when we go out to do our engagements, often we find that they haven't been enabled. They were never turned on, or they're not there anymore. The log spool space is so small that they keep getting overwritten, and the information we're looking for isn't there. Often the integrity of the logs is questionable. If a host has been compromised, you really can't trust the logs as much as you'd like to. So having an external logging source is important. But the most important thing is making sure someone reads them. You can do all logging you want, but if no one's going to go back and look at the data, it's not worth anything. The other thing about logs is that they provide the who and when. They'll tell you what node talked to what node and at what time, but they're not going to give you what actually transpired between those two connections. So they don't tell you the what. And what you need for the what is usually packet sniffer, something to go out and look at that traffic. I tried to get a picture of a network sniffer. I did a search on the internet, and this is what I found. That's not the best sniffing picture, but yeah. So what you need sniffers for is that you need sniffers to help you really see what's on your network. They let you look at the zeros and ones. Intrusion detection systems, network intrusion detection systems, really help you do some pre-processing. They give you some filtering to help you kind of look at on specific information. Switched environments can be a challenge at times. Instead of a hub where you have a nice flat network where you can see all the traffic, with a switched environment, you're going to have a lot of point-to-point links. So you have to do a little design up front to determine where you can put your sniffers in a switched environment. A lot of the new technology, there's monitoring ports, there's supervisor ports right on the switch, so it's not as much of an issue. And these days, a lot of the tools are all being consolidated, so the information is typically there anyway. There's a picture of some raw output. I got this slide from Ron Gula. I don't know if he's here or not, but tell him I gave him his props. So this is just a raw output of some data. If you're real comfortable looking at individual packets and going through and kind of resolving the ASCII characters into text, you're probably more comfortable with the raw output. Other people like stuff a little cleaner. I stole this from Ron again. This comes off of his Dragon intrusion detection system. And it's a little bit cleaner, giving you the IP numbers broken down and kind of giving you some analysis already on what's happening. And this is some event around SSH running on a higher port. And with analysis, again, it's really easy to go out and start collecting lots and lots of data. You can get gigabytes of data really quick. So to analyze that, you know, at the packet level, packet by packet can take forever. So what you really need is some type of system or some tools to help you automate that and go through that analysis. And then automation really helps you do it consistently. If you're looking through lots of packets, you want to be able to look at them the same way over and over again so you get your consistent results. And tools and systems really help you do that. Another tip is to filter and focus up front. If you can do that, for example, if you know you're going to be looking at email traffic and you can filter out everything else and just focus in on your email traffic, that's going to make your life a lot easier when you do your analysis. These are just some trends I've seen with audit monitoring and the tools that are out there. You're going to start seeing evidence preservation being built right into the tools, things like chain of custody, letting you know what types of steps you have to take if you're going to go through litigation. Those will be built right into the tools. Data warehousing, being able to store and retrieve large amounts of data quickly. Data mining is another big trend where you're able to look for different events through data mining algorithm techniques like clustering, so you can kind of get a new view of event information. Correlating events, being able to look at individual events across your network and then compile them into one source to get a new look or a different type of event from the disparate nodes. Event interpretation, you're going to see a lot more of the ability to program what you want your tools to look for and being able to let you know that this is based on a couple different simultaneous events. It's going to generate what you're looking for in terms of a new event. Passive monitoring, you're going to see more tools being more passive on your network. A lot of people don't do a lot of monitoring now or auditing because it induces a load on your network or the systems. These are going to become more passive, so it's not going to induce those loads. Data exchange is important, being able to look at information from multiple sources and being able to compile them together so there's no loss. And then some artificial intelligence based on top to help predict events and also to interpret some type of intent. Here's some examples of some tools and some vendors. Again, I mentioned Counterpane before. They're one of the managed security providers out there. There's another one out there called Security Tracker. There's other companies out like Security Tracker, but they monitor open sources for new vulnerabilities or new events. What they do is they'll keep a profile of what your environment looks like. Anytime something new in the world that may affect your environment happens, they'll let you know. And then Server Vault is another example of an outsourced company. They're basically a co-location facility, but they've really put a lot of money into being secure. Everything from the physical to redundant power, up to some pretty advanced networking and monitoring techniques. Network appliances are another big trend. In NetFox, I showed you some examples of that. Appliances are going to be something you can just rack mount in your network, have a real simple GUI to configure them. They do one or two things real simple. They do them real well, real efficiently. There's tools out there that are going to give you the interactive analysis. I showed you the tool, the Net4 tool. I don't think Network Forensics is really selling that tool anymore. But another good one out there is Silent Runner. They do some really cool visualization on top of of the interactive analysis. So you can look at packets, you can drill down on packets, and then it can do pictures, and it will do link analysis. You can do network flybys. It's some pretty cool stuff. It's a little expensive, but good for analysis. And then there's log consolidators, where you can compile logs from multiple sources into one location. Intrusion.com is our sponsor here. I think they're upstairs still. You can probably get some information from them if you're interested. I'm just going to finish up with a couple tips. The first one is just do it one step at a time. I know you're all really jazzed up now to go out and do some audit monitoring on your network. You're ready to run out there and do it all. But really, what you want to do is to kind of design something up front, then implement it and phase it in one step at a time. Automation is your big friend. It's going to help you do things consistently. Storage, make sure you have enough storage. Again, you can collect a lot of information real fast, so you need to be able to have enough storage to hold it all. And then sometimes that data that you're storing may be sensitive, so you need to take that into consideration, what you're storing. And if you are going to do this, it's really helpful if you can measure what you're doing to help win your case. If you can show something like bandwidth improving up front and measure that, that's going to help you out. And then on the don'ts, really pretty self-explanatory. Don't underestimate. I talked about some legal responsibilities. And then don't believe in silver bullets. There's no one vendor or one thing out there that's going to solve all your problems. This is really just it's a system of tools and techniques that's going to be combined to give you the audit and monitoring. So just to wrap up, some of the benefits. Again, you're going to increase your knowledge and awareness of your network and its usage practices. You're going to get to know who's on your network, what they're doing. You're going to enhance your current detection and protection processes. You're going to have reduced time when you and resource costs when you respond to an incident. You're going to reduce your network misuse and abuse a lot. And overall, you're going to be able to enforce your policy. I think that's all I have. Are there any questions? I have a book I'm supposed to give out to the best question or the only question. Yes, sir?
I just want to find out if anybody else is seeing a trend. We're seeing a trend with bad programming for network management tools, specifically Computer Associates, TNG, which doesn't talk for a firewall and requires you to open up too many ports. No control, with no authentication for management, seeing the same thing with Tivoli, and seeing the same thing with HP Overview, and the network managers to manage these things require full administrative rights on all systems at all times. And I'm not sure if you guys are seeing the same thing. I am real frustrated, and I've gotten belligerent with these vendors because it's opened up major security holes in a lot of environments involved.
Yeah, I've seen some of that in the past, and sometimes we'll engineer some solutions where we have a dedicated network just for the monitoring, so you can kind of restrict physical access that way. It ups your cost quite a bit, but it's one solution. I could talk to you more about some others. Right. Right. Yeah, a lot of those vendors seem to think they've invented monitoring and don't really take security into consideration. I gave you some screenshots from Network Forensics Tool up front. I don't think they're selling that product anymore. It was called Net4 by a company called Network Forensics. The product was called NET, the number 4. Gotcha. Net4.
Is there any other tool like that that combines sessions?
They're free? Or?
There are some tools out there. Some of the IDS tools will do that. Some of the IDS tools out there will help you do some pre-processing and rebuild sessions. It all depends on what those. Right. You really have to sit down and determine what you're looking for, what type of traffic you're trying to capture. A lot of times you may be able to use some of the log files you already have. In other cases, you may be able to, if you already have an intrusion detection system, you may be able to add some new signatures to get the information you're looking for. Yeah, it really depends on the environment and the information you're trying to capture.
I misled you. What I meant to say was that if you want a new tool that you can use to do your job, obviously you've got several tools here you have to use. What would you want that tool to do? Would you want it to be going after a forensic type of analysis or a piece of data?
I would want something to be able to do a bulk of my analysis and have strong data warehousing, data mining utilities built into it. The problem really is when you're collecting large amounts of data, be able to process and go through it all is really computationally intensive. So finding tools that can do that well and fast and correct are hard. That's why sometimes it's a collection of tools you have to put together.
That's typically one of the problems with doing with the standard auditing monitoring is a lot of the network ministries that you would typically want to watch for, you know, outside of what, say, an IDS would catch. You know, the logs are not necessarily going to catch, or if they do, person's not necessarily going to notice that unless they're really looking and paying attention to what they're doing. So have you seen anything as far as doing something like behavioral analysis of network patterns? Usage patterns of users. Now, this user will typically go onto this server at this time of the day. Once they fall outside that pattern, you know something's going wrong. So this is a sort of anomaly.
Yeah,
have you seen anything like that going out?
I haven't seen anything like that commercially. I've seen some of that in the research community. The problem with those type of statistical anomaly type detections is you can't always determine the intent.
Right.
So that's
it, that's really what you do to try to reduce your load on the,
right.
Your workload on the non-auditing time.
Right. But some of the new things with data mining, you're able to look at different event patterns through clustering to help determine different types of events. Again, I don't see that in any commercial products yet, but that's I see that in the research field. Yes.
What you were just talking about was that API application.
Yes. I'm not familiar with that, so I'm sorry. I could find out for you. And do you have a card? It's with the AI, some of the AI prediction capabilities that's related to Nugent's. If you come up, I can try to find out for you. Anyone else? Do you want to vote on the book? I can throw it out there. First question? What? The book is called Database Nation. It's autographed, I think. Okay, thank you.